not, but the view of the screens will be more important. It is wonderful to have our guests and panelists. We're very grateful. Michelle Knight, our Chief Investment Officer, will provide introductions. And I just want to set one little theme to begin. The Ropes Wealth Perspectives, I think, is aptly named. We're going to have wonderful experience perspectives on impact investments. Just the broader context to begin, I think all of us here individually in our own planning and our own families and also as advisors think in a broader context all the time about impact, social responsibility in our planning for families, in the values that we think about with generational planning, children and grandchildren, gift planning, estate planning, philanthropy planning. Everything we do, really, especially these days, has an element of impact to it. So this is an important part from the investment point of view of, I think, what we're all concerned about, which is a very holistic approach to impact living and socially responsible values from many different perspectives. So that's the context, I think, in which the investment discussion is increasingly necessary in everything that we do as professionals, as individuals, as members of families. And with that initial perspective, I'm going to turn this over to Michelle Knight, our Chief Investment Officer, to begin our first series. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me get this mic situated. Okay. Well, thank you so much and welcome. I am just so delighted about today's gathering and to welcome you all here, both clients and friends of Ropes Wealth Advisors. This event, you know, we're talking about values and impact investing and socially responsible investing, but I think just actually coming together here today for Ropes Wealth Advisors, our new company, is really an example of our values in action, bringing people together to talk about important trends and issues, and having conversation and education is one of our most treasured values at Ropes Wealth Advisors and really Ropes and Gray. So I couldn't be more pleased to kick off this series, and we hope that you will join us later in the year for some other events that we have related to intergenerational wealth planning. To get started, I'm also excited to be here because socially responsible impact investing is a sort of passion or hobby or interest of mine personally, and it's been sort of a labor of love with some of the clients that I've worked with in the past. And I think one of the interesting things about responsible or values investing is that it's really not anymore kind of a fly-by-night trend. This is one of the fastest growing market segments, representing $21.7 trillion of assets globally. Our friends overseas are actually more enlightened about values-aligned investing than we are, right? But in the U.S., these investments have grown just even in the last 2 years by more than 76%, from $3.7 trillion at the start of 2012 to just under $7 trillion at the start of 2014. This is according to the U.S. Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investments. One of the things that I've encountered in talking with clients about values or socially responsible investing is that there can be a lot of misinformation and even a little bit of intimidation about the space. You know, recent media headlines, we all know there's many sit-ins happening at our local colleges and universities around fossil fuel divestment. And so that's sort of one approach to values or impact-related investing that gets widely publicized. Another that we see a lot in the media is around, you know, sort of private equity investing and cutting-edge technologies. But for the average everyday investor without megabucks, that might seem pretty intimidating and very, very risky. So today, what I hope we can do with our wonderful panel of speakers is to really talk about what lies in between. in between divestment strategies, in between sort of cutting edge private equity investments that are very high risk, very important, but maybe not for everyone. We are going to talk about this continuum of opportunities. And I promise this is the only slide that we have today. Because slides are sort of intimidating, aren't they? But this really tries to depict that, you know, for families and any individual investor, there's a range of opportunities to reflect your values and how your portfolio is managed. And by the way, and as Cheryl, David, and Rachel are going to tell us, they're accessible in mutual funds, in private investments as low as $100,000. These are investment opportunities that you and your family can incorporate in your portfolio easily and efficiently with some guidance, hopefully from enlightened firms like Ropes Wealth Advisors, but to help you along the way, but in a way that you can hopefully build a legacy of value investments that carry on your family's values and fulfill your objectives. So I couldn't be more pleased to talk about this subject today and to really showcase what we think are our several key investment manager partners that Ropes Wealth Advisors works with. And so to kick things off, I'm actually going to ask each panelist, introduce them, and ask them at that moment to give us a little snapshot into what they do at their firm in their investment strategy. So I'm going to pick on you first, Cheryl. So Cheryl Smith is a managing partner at Trillium Asset Management, which happens to be the oldest investment advisor exclusively focused on sustainable and responsible investing. She is a PhD, a CFA, has many, many degrees, and really began her career at Trillium, had a couple of stops along the way, and then returned to the firm that you love. And she is going to speak to us about what Trillium is doing in the socially responsible space.
Thank you, Michelle. Trillium Asset Management, as Michelle said, is a long-established firm. We were founded in 1982, and we came out of an environment of sort of a trust department, and our original clients were primarily high-net-worth individuals. We were managing their entire portfolio with a all-capitalization core strategy, what it would be called today. Then it was just called an investment portfolio, and bonds with that as a balanced portfolio. Over time, we've developed into having a expertise both in bonds, but I'm going to leave that to my extremely distinguished colleague here, David Sand, who also used to work at Trillium many, many years ago, and also a focus on equity investment. So one of the things I'm going to be talking to you about is equity investment. But what Trillium specializes in is using an equity portfolio to create both extremely competitive returns on a risk-adjusted basis, as well as impact in the equity the public equity space. So looking at how can owners of capital use that capital to create positive change on areas like board diversity, on areas like supply chain management, environmental issues, governance, a whole spectrum of issues, and we'll go into some examples on that later. But my responsibilities there are as a portfolio manager of equity strategies, as the economist, the strategist, and as Michelle said, kind of managing partner variety.
Thank you, Cheryl. And so as you mentioned, you highlighted David's extensive experience in the socially responsible ESG impact investing space. I believe your bio calls you a trailblazer, and that is true. And we're very pleased to welcome you. David Sand is the Chief Investment Strategist at Community Capital Management, and he will speak about Community Capital's unique approach in fixed income values-aligned investing. You founded Access Capital Strategies and was the President and Chief Investment Officer from 1994 to 2010. David, you have your bachelor's degree from Princeton University and a master's.
Don't oversell here.
Yeah, right. from Harvard's Kennedy School, and we're so pleased to have you here today to bring your perspective.
Thank you, Michelle. Good morning, everybody. I just want to say shout out to you because Cheryl already said I used to work at Trillium. We have lots of clients who also use Root. I don't think the three of us have ever been or our three firms have ever been presented together. So excellent job curating this.
Yes, thank you.
To set it up. So I work for Community Capital Management. We're the largest fixed income impact investment firm in the United States. The firm's based in Florida. We have an office in Charlotte, North Carolina. My colleague Andy Shafter, who's here today also, and I are here in Boston. We manage a little over $2 billion, all in bonds, all in the United States, and all supporting community economic development in targeted geographies or impact themes within the United States. So as Michelle said, we do have a mutual fund. It has a 4-star Morningstar rating. It is a bond fund. So from an asset allocation or money management point of view, it's a high credit quality bond fund. But unlike our competition, 100% of the assets are U.S. high credit quality, affordable home ownership, affordable economic development, alternative energy, sustainable agriculture, various things like that. What we do and started doing many, many years ago and continue to do is we give clients the opportunity to tell us where they want their money invested. Not to make investment decisions. I know this is a law firm. We are the fiduciaries. No one can tell us what to buy or what to sell, but we can have them tell us they want money in the city of Boston, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Norfolk County, Suffolk County, the MSA of Boston. We've seen geography within the United States chopped up, sliced and diced just about every way possible. And what we do is assemble portfolios. Now we have hundreds of clients giving us slightly different, similar but not identical commitments, and we're able to assemble an entire portfolio, manage it in such a way that we get the risk and return and income that we're looking for, but we can tell each client where their money has gone with great specificity and at the granular level. And we can get into it more in the discussion, but the flip side of the one-page handout that's in your material talks about one of the, it happens to be in Chelsea, one of the investments that we made. That investment is owned in separate accounts. It's owned in our fund. There's all kind of financial engineering that goes along with it. But our role, we think and we hope, is to make ourselves invisible and let our clients have a direct connection with where their money's placed and with the impact that their money can have over time. Thanks.
Thank you. And speaking of really direct connections to where money's invested and in the impact that you can have, I think Rachel Sirota, responsible for investor relations at Root Capital, what your firm brings is I think, such an interesting perspective. Besides having on due diligence trips the most fantastic coffee that you've ever consumed, Root Capital is doing amazing things in the private debt space, but again, in a way that, and you'll see a theme throughout today's session, is really about making investments that are accessible to families across the board. So Rachel, you joined Root Capital in 2012. You had previously worked in investor relations at the Developing World Markets, which is an investment bank doing microfinance, and also in several nonprofits like Safe Water Network, the African American Institute, and Axion. You have your master's in international affairs from Columbia University, and we are very pleased to welcome you to our panel.
Thank you very much. Nice to see everybody this morning. So Root Capital is a nonprofit lender. We're headquartered just over the river in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Our mission as a nonprofit is to grow rural livelihoods, and we do that by investing in agricultural businesses in Latin America and Africa. And really, the investment strategy evolved from our founder, Willie Foote, really looking to put a very small dent in sort of the global problem of rural poverty. And so some statistics you might have heard, there are 2.6 billion people living on less than $2 a day. So that's a third of the world's population. The majority of those people are living in rural areas, and they rely on agriculture as a way to make a living and to feed their families and themselves. but they lack access to markets. These are often really small-scale farmers, so farming on just a couple acres of land, think about what you could do sort of in your backyard. And they don't have access to markets where they can sell their product and get a fair price for that product. So we work with businesses that are in these communities, and these businesses we think are the key to linking these small-scale farmers to local and international markets. So these businesses aggregate, so this would be like a farmer cooperative. They are aggregating hundreds to thousands of farmers and selling their product to buyers. And the most of the businesses that we work with are working in sustainable natural products, so things like coffee, cocoa, cashews. And there's a lot of demand from buyers like Starbucks, Costco, and if you've ever bought a cup of Starbucks coffee, you know that they are really willing to pay premium prices for that quality coffee. So we invest in businesses because these businesses lack access to finance. So they are stuck in what we call the missing middle. They're too big for microfinance. They're too small, too risky, too remote to get financing from local commercial banks. So they're unable to grow and sort of buy product from more farmers. And so that's what Root Capital, our job, our sort of our goal is to fill this gap. We were founded in 1999, so 15 years ago. And we provide loans and financial management training to businesses so that they can have access to finance and to capacity building so that they can grow over time. We manage about $140 million in assets. We've done 1,500 loans to businesses, and these are mostly short-term loans at the beginning of a harvest season so that a business can have the cash on hand to purchase the coffee from the farmers and make a sale to, say, a Starbucks. We've lent out over $750 million over the course of our 15 years and gotten all but sort of less than just about 3% back. So for us, that feels like a pretty good track record. I think the strength in us being able to do that is really in our underwriting and due diligence process. So we have pretty rigorous process. We are evaluating businesses across financial, social, and environmental metrics. Businesses have to meet criteria across all of those areas for us to consider them for an investment. And our loan officers, so the people who are actually managing these relationships, are all based on the ground. They're all local hires, which means that they are from and live in the places that we work. So, like I said, we're headquartered in Cambridge, but we have 10 offices globally in Latin America and Sub-Saharan Africa. Our loan officers speak the language, they understand the culture, they know their markets, and they are in constant contact with the clients, the businesses that they serve, so they know what those clients' needs are, and they can also pretty quickly identify any issues and try and troubleshoot. So I'll just end with sort of how do we fund all of that. So we are a nonprofit, so we raise philanthropic funds from donors. That funding covers the costs of the training programs that we provide to our borrowers, to our clients, as well as sort of the impact assessment and sort of other field building activities that we take to try and build a more sustainable global market for agricultural finance. We also raise philanthropic funds to serve as the first loss on our loan portfolio. So we are a nonprofit, we can't accept equity. So we raise grant funding to serve as that layer. And then we borrow from investors. So we have a private debt fixed income product. It's a minimum of $25,000. We offer 1 to 5 year terms. We pay an annual interest rate that ranges from 1.25% to 2.75%, and that depends on the tenor. And, you know, 100% of the loan funds that we borrow are used to you know, provide the capital to businesses, so it's on lend. So it really, as Michelle was saying, is we try and provide a direct link from investors to the businesses and sort of show that impact to investors.
Thank you so much. So I would be remiss if I didn't introduce my colleague, Tim Kyla. He's one of the portfolio managers at Ropes Wealth Advisors, and he's gonna help me today with navigating a conversation with our panelists. And I'm going to kick things off, though, with a question I like to go right for the touchy-feely. I want to ask the panel, what makes you proud about what you do?
I'll start. What makes me incredibly proud is seeing, and I'm going to pull the gray hair card here, seeing over a lifetime in this, over 30 years in this business, of watching a field develop from a sense where the divide between investors and their effect on the world was absolute and complete. You made your money over here, and if you felt like it, you might take some of your profits and donate them to something that had an effect over there. And you maybe had your work life, then you had your charitable life, and then you had your home life. And all three of those spheres were very, very separate. I've seen that field develop to an area where it is possible to take the wealth and the capital that we all have as owners, as people that have spent lifetimes working, that want to pass on to our children, or as stewards or fiduciaries for other organizations, and are able to take that capital and make it serve a dual purpose, is able to take it and invest it and have it grow, produce dividends, have a good return, a very, very competitive return, and at the same time, look to what the effect of that is on the world. So, for example, in Trillium looks at the environmental aspects of the companies we invest in. We look at their social supply chain issues. We look at how they're governed. All of those are aspects in our choices of what we're buying, what we're holding for our clients. And in addition, we do shareholder advocacy. So we are looking at changing the companies that we're investing in and making them better companies. So one example here, I'm going to look at a governance example on board diversity. It is very common, certainly if you've ever watched Mad Men or any of the things from back, you know, there was a very different world in the 1960s. But corporate boards still have an awful lot of that characteristic. But the academic studies indicate that a more diverse board makes better decisions. Diversity of experience. If everybody on the board, if it's a software company and everybody on the board writes code, that's not going to be a good board, however good they are at writing code. Diversity of experience. You need people that are managers. You need people that are accountants. You need people that maybe, if it's consumer facing, that have consumer experience. Diversity by gender. Diversity by race. Diversity by ethnicity. All of those go into having a board that makes better decisions, and academic research shows that this leads to better stock performance, not just better performance in terms of return on assets, but better stock performance. So we've been working with two companies recently, eBay and Chipotle Mexican Grill, to emphasize to them how important it is to look for a diverse board. Both of those have, within the last quarter, agreed to put into their nominating charter issues about diversity. So as they choose new board members in the future, they'll be doing that. So that would be an example from the diversity and governance side. Another example is internet privacy. We're all aware of very large cases where some trusted financial service provider or shopping destination like Target has lost our data. I've been a victim of identity theft. Believe me, it is not something you want to have happen to you. It takes months.
Get a good lawyer.
Yeah. I need a good lawyer. Months and months of work to come from that. So one of the things one of the companies Trillium's been working with is Priceline. We give our money, we give our data to them over the internet, we put in our credit card, all of those kinds of things. We've asked them to elevate to the board level of the audit committee the oversight of regulatory risk, reputational risk, privacy risk, and data security, because it is so fundamental to an organization like Priceline for the people who use its services to feel that their data is secure when they use it. So that would be an example from an internet privacy kind of business running. And a lot of other examples, but what I am so proud of is that this field has really changed to the point where people are no longer passive owners of capital. They say, it matters what I invest in, and it matters how the company that I invest in is stewarding those resources. And I can have a voice, I can do that. I'm not at all passionate about it.
So pride, I guess I'd do one personal and one professional. Personally, coming through the financial crisis, my older two kids were just old enough to have it be a teaching moment, and being able to explain to them what predatory loans were and mortgages. I tried to give them what CDOs were. I'm not sure they quite got that. But and then to say that the work that I did, because I do work in mortgage-backed securities, mortgage finance, bond investing, and how that was helping real people in the low and moderate income category, frequently first-time home buyers, a lot of time single women-headed households, non-traditional households, that was the type of finance that I did on behalf of my clients, was definitely proud of that. So far, none of my kids have gone into financial services, but we'll see. And then professionally, been thinking about this a lot since what's been happening in Baltimore the last couple of days, being able to be part of a solution for income inequality, for the areas in America that need revitalization, that are overlooked by the private capital markets, or that when the private capital markets come into them, they come in a way that is not respectful or mindful of neighborhood traditions, neighborhood residents, things of that sort. That I take pride about a lot. Wherever I go, we have this very large portfolio, not large enough, but we have this large portfolio. So pretty much any part of the country where I have an opportunity to talk to people, be it clients or prospects, we've been involved in some fashion in supporting a local community economic development, either affordable housing or, I'm not sure if I mentioned before, we do securitize small businesses. So I've been able to go places and talk about a small business that we've supported through purchasing a small business loan. And as I said before, make people understand that there are ways that they can use their portfolio and get a result that is in their community and mission aligned with what they're doing.
So I think, you know, for me, Root Capital is an impact first lender. We have a strong mission. And, you know, I think what I'm most proud of is how we actually implement that on the ground. And we, you know, are working. I think the key is that the people that we work with really put this into action. So the people that I work with are sort of what I'm most proud of. Our loan officers are so dedicated to our clients. They're working to be innovative, to find new financial products, new ways to serve them, all in service of the business being able to grow over time. And we are long-term partners to our clients. And, you know, there's never a bad idea we hear at Root Capital. We like to try everything. And so it's just, I work with really passionate people. And, you know, over the past 15 years, Root Capital has grown. At the end of last year, we hit $100 million balance for us, a small sort of investment fund. That was a big milestone for us. And, you know, next year we think we'll cumulatively have done $1 billion in disbursements. And when you start to add those things together, it starts to really tell a story, and what we think is sort of puts a stake in the ground in the market and really starts to show something that's real, that these are investable markets. And for me personally, you know, I interface between our investors, and I work a lot with our credit managers and our lending staff to make sure that we have the right capital. So in terms of have the right amount, at the right price, at the right tenor, to be able to meet the needs of our clients. And so that I feel pretty honored and privileged to be able to do that and make that connection and give investors that connection. And we wouldn't be where we were if it wasn't for investor capital. So I feel pretty lucky. Plus, we have lots of coffee and chocolate that are floating around the office, so that, you know, makes any day a good day.
No, that's great. Thank you so much. You know, one of the things Michelle was talking about earlier is the growth of these assets in this space. And so I'm just interested to hear your guys' thoughts on on what you think the best developments in this space, the sustainable impact SRI space, have been coming out of this increased investor demand and this increased flow of money into the space.
So there are now an increased number of platforms at firms that are in the business of managing or guiding or advising other people's money. Pretty much all the traditional wealth management firms, certainly all the brokerage, a lot of the independent firms, not quite sure what to call Ropes Wealth, but a specialty firm. And that, for folks like the three of us who were all in the grand scheme of things, relatively small, but real enterprises with real missions and payrolls and budgets and balance sheets and clients and all of that, it's a wonderful opportunity because there is distribution now that's available and access and visibility that was not the case and that none of us have the marketing budgets to get on our own. That's the good news. The cloud around the silver lining, of course, is that there are now many, many mainstream firms that, having historically completely ignored or denigrated the existence of the market or the values or the track record, are now looking long and hard at what they can do, not necessarily to re-engineer their entire business models, but to tweak them a little bit and then walk in front of people and say, well, here's an impact opportunity. You certainly don't need to move your money to any new advisor. This is something that we can do for you. So it, I would say the good news outweighs the bad, but it is still a competitive challenge as well.
I'll jump onto that and say David's really captured that well, and I really commend you for, as David said, the first time that all three of us, who we all view as very active in this space and truly committed over the years to doing it in the same place here. So the benefit is the much greater reach. The downside is the Me Too-ness, if you will, or the in environmental fields, they call it greenwashing, so we'll call it SRI washing of a portfolio. You know, this is really what it, well, we can put a little fancy marketing piece out on this. But nonetheless, there is increasing interest at the client or wealth owner or asset owner level. So we are seeing state pension funds grappling with the issue of, certainly the issue of governance, where you have the California retirement funds or the New York retirement funds, very interested in the issue of how does governance affect their investments, how does it affect the beneficiaries of those pensions, and how does it affect their investment performance. You see foundations, particularly environmental foundations, becoming aware that it is critical to think about how they invest their dollars, and investing their dollars in companies that are not safeguarding the environment is not a good use of their assets, because then they have to spend all of their philanthropic work undoing what they just did. So we're beginning to see many, many people, whether they're individuals, high net worth individuals, second and third generation wealth, asset owners, pensions, beginning to understand this connection. And so that is a big change.
Yeah, and I would agree with everything that was said, but I do think that that there are so many more products available now has really allowed more investors to crowd into the space. So there are products across asset classes, some better than others, but there are sort of, an investor can create a whole portfolio now around socially responsible or impact investments. They're allowed to get a range of returns. They can invest in a different variety across the impact spectrum, different issue areas that they didn't have access to before. And I think that's really opened the doors and allowed for a lot of people to enter the space who wouldn't have done so previously because of liquidity requirements or return requirements, but also players who have been in the space, it allows them to maybe expand, dedicate their total portfolio, their whole portfolio to it in ways that they just couldn't do it before. And I think we've also seen some pretty innovative products emerging, like social impact bonds, where it's, the the return is actually, the impact is built into the return that the investors are getting. And I think that's sort of a new place that and sort of benefit that we're seeing in the space.
I think that, thank you for saying it, because I think so much of what I hope people leave here with today is this picture that, you know, the range of opportunities is wide and that you can build an entire portfolio if you choose across a spectrum of opportunities that reflect your values. And, you know, I actually said to the panel, we had a little prep call last week, and I don't even want to pose to the panel this question of, you know, are the returns as competitive in your investments? Because to me, that's an old question that has been answered. Instead, I'd rather talk about how the innovation, the demand has led to more products, more innovation, and more opportunities so that investors no longer have to sort of dabble in the space, but can actually really build a very philosophically aligned portfolio and have it work and fulfill their objectives. And by the way, their fiduciary objectives fully. But one thing I am curious about, with all of the increased demand and all of the competition that we're talking about, and the increasing sophistication of your clients, of your investor clients, how is that changing your firm's strategies? And maybe picking up a little bit on the demonstration, not only of investment results, and again, we're not even going to go there about do we generate the same competitive returns mm-hmm. as other non-socially minded strategies, but more around showing the impact of what you do. Can you speak to that?
Sure.
Your turn to go first.
Okay. So I don't know that, you know, as we've grown over the past several years, we've definitely had more sophisticated investors, sort of larger scale capital invest in us and become our partners. I don't think it's necessarily changed our strategy. It's always been sort of mission focused on this specific segment of the market, but I think it has changed, and to our benefit, the way that we operate. So it's definitely made us or forced us willingly, and we've also gotten great advice from investors on how to professionalize our business and our operations, especially as we have more and more staff globally. It's, you know, we've had to be a bit more rigorous and develop processes and policies and platforms internally to really support the complexity of our business, and investors have helped us do that. So we've put a lot of investments into making sure we have the right IT systems and back office team, making sure that we have the right and prudent risk management policies and procedures around how we provision for our loans, making sure that we are structured globally as we expand and grow our team to ways that we look more like a bank. And so these are all ways that I think we, you know, help us and will get us to the next phase of growth and enable us to have more and more impact as our portfolio gets bigger.
So at Community Capital, we've seen a pretty profound change triggered, Michelle, by kind of the trends we're talking about. It started probably 4 or 5 years ago, really picked up in 2014. And so just a little background. So we've always worked in a geographically specific focus for clients. So a client could be a financial institution that is a depository. They take deposits from a certain geography. We invest on their behalf in that geography. We work for the MassPrim, the retirement system for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We invest for them in Massachusetts. So that's been our playbook. We've always done community economic development, or what's now called impact, within those targeted geographies, but the change that has come is clients coming, families, family offices, some foundations, and understanding that the geography is going to be within the United States, but really focusing on the impact theme. So they're saying, we want to do sustainable agriculture or alternative energy or women and children focused. You figure out the geography for us, the returns, the risk that you're getting, knowing that it's going to be in the United States, works from an asset allocation point of view, and then the impetus is the theme and not just the geography. Quite frankly, 10 years ago, we didn't really think that existed, and now it exists, and it's growing quite rapidly.
I would say we've also, I'll call that a specialization in a sense, or a cross-cutting. So instead of geography, maybe layers in terms of issue area. And we've certainly seen additional specialization and additional organizations coming that make it possible. So Trillium's been invested in community economic development through Root Capital, through a number of other community development financial institutions. It's very useful for us to have a community capital management available for us as we're building out. We build individual bond portfolios, but as we're building out those individual bond portfolios, knowing that David and his group will handle that very well, or for our smaller clients where we're trying to have a bond allocation and it doesn't make sense to build an individual allocation. Within our equity part, we've seen going, as I said at the beginning, you know, we had a sort of, it was an investment portfolio. Excuse me. We didn't call it all cap. We didn't call it large cap or small. It was just investments. And we've specialized that over time. Mm-hmm. So now we have ones that are delineated by market capitalization, large or small, mid. We have ones that are delineated by more of a theme. We have some very sustainability-focused ones that are more thematic. They're focused on economic empowerment and a cleaner environment and healthy living. We have fossil fuel-free portfolios for that growing divestment movement. So we've seen more specialization and people coming to us for a particular strategy within that. And I really welcome that development. It helps us work with groups like Robust Wealth to have a range of different parts that might fit into one member of a family's portfolio and another part might fit into a different member based on age. We have a growth and income strategy for those that are looking for more income from their portfolio, for example. So really the increasing entry of investors into this field has allowed a greater specialization. And I'm an economist, so the gains from specialization and economies of scale are always there. So it's a good development from our perspective.
I was just going to add one of the exciting developments from my perspective as a person who's sort of running manager due diligence is the accessibility. I think you're, all the firms that are on the panel here, you know, in the past you might have had a scenario where only clients of a certain amount of assets could allocate to these strategies. And today, I mean, so many of the types of investments we're talking about, there's, you know, low minimums on the private side. And then mutual fund formats, you know, so 40 Act, daily liquidity, mutual funds, as well as, you know, separate accounts and very customized, personalized implementation. But the benefit of that is, you know, you work with a family and you maybe work with a foundation portfolio or a portfolio for a matriarch, a patriarch, you're maybe using a more customized individual security implementation, but then you don't lose the values aligned portfolio management when you're working with the grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And in fact, sometimes those are the people that are driving the interest in the first place, or the younger generation. So being able to come to the table, and I welcome this from all of the firms here today and other investment partners that we work with, a huge benefit to the increased demand and growing sophistication of clients is that there's more accessibility. This isn't just, you know, kind of a high class only certain segment, and that is a tremendous development.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to dive in a little bit more. You know, we've been talking very thematically so far, but what I've always found really helpful is to hear kind of the stories that you guys see every day. You know, the specific impacts you're having. So I'm curious, you know, beyond the kind of the numbers and the math, what other kinds of impacts are you providing? And I'd love to hear just specific, you know, examples, you know, stocks, bonds, and businesses.
Sure, I'll start. A couple of examples that are we've been working on for shareholder advocacy, very specifically. One company we've been and I should say Trillium has a four-person team that is specifically devoted to advocacy. So we're engaging with companies about what their practices and policies are and hoping to work with them to improve their policy. So one company we've been working with for a long time is Lowe's. I'm sure you've all seen or been to a Lowe's, large company that does home, build it, do it yourself, home repair, construction, lawn and garden. One of the issues that has been developing in the United States for the last 10 years is the issue of bee die-off. And if you are familiar with bees, other than not wanting to get stung by them, they're tremendously important as pollinators. And a lot of the crops, for example, almonds in California are entirely bee pollinated. If you don't have bees, you don't have almonds. Moths don't do it. Birds don't do it. It's got to be bees. And part of what we've been seeing over the past 10 years is catastrophic bee colony collapse, where for some reason the entire bee population will die off. A very bad thing if you like to eat, because you do need pollination in order to eat. We've been working with Lowe's to remove from their shelves, and they've recently agreed to remove from their shelves chemicals for lawns and gardens that have a specific thing, which is a neonicotinoid, which turns out is toxic to bees. So a lot of the lawn and garden care products that have been available that you've innocently been putting on your lawn or farmers have been spraying across their fields have neonicotinoids in them because they're a pest control. They control other things that are eating plants, but they also have this catastrophic effect for bees. So one of the things we've been working with on Lowe's is to remove these products from them. And so this quarter, we've recently reached an agreement with Lowe's that they are going to be phasing out and removing from their shelves products containing neonicotinoids. So it seems like a small thing, but I like to eat almonds, among other things. And in terms of maintaining a global ecosystem, that is actually a critical thing. We're hoping that with Lowe's having done this, that we can get Home Depot to do it, and then that we can work on the next step is getting the companies that are making pesticides and fungicides for larger crop deployment will also move in that direction. So there's one example.
Yeah. So my example is about 6 miles away from where we're sitting today. And again, it's on the back of the one pager, but it's Spencer Green in Chelsea. It's on the site of the old Chelsea Armory, which had been abandoned and was derelict. If you will, and the neighborhood of Chelsea would fit the category of blighted. And the redevelopment effort, which is continuing there and which faces challenges, as these always do, one of the showcase transactions that we are investors in involved the demolition of the old armory, building a affordable housing property there. I don't even want to call it a project because there's all kind of connotations with project. And it was a demonstration, national model demonstration for green. One of the things I really like is that it happened to be around the time that BU was building that fabulous gym on Comm Ave, and they got the old wood from the floor of the BU gym and some of the old wood from the Chelsea Armory, and that's the wood that's in some of the apartments. It has, you know, everything you'd expect, solar panel, reduced water use, and the impact of that particular property is that people who live there, obviously the main driver is affordable housing for people who need help, but part and parcel of that or parallel to that is that they're living in a way that's more in tune with the environment. A while ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you couldn't do that because the financing was so tight for affordable housing that you could just barely get people in, and developers and advocacies and this and a lot of the work we do involves actively nonprofit community groups, community development organizations. They would have loved to be able to do more green or sustainable, but the money wasn't there. Well, now the money is there because whereas a firm like ours is making market rate, long-term investments, kind of, if you will, the takeout for that mortgage, there are foundations, there are state agencies, there are local agencies that can play a part at the front end in the design, in the implementation, in the engineering, in the architecture to make the built environment a more successful environment. Our clients who have targeted Massachusetts own a piece of that, and our clients who've targeted green or green buildings or sustainability own a piece of that as well.
So my example's a little bit farther away, but we started lending to a coffee cooperative in Rwanda in 2005. It was our first client in Africa. The cooperative is called Musasa. Most of the members of this cooperative, the farmers, are women, and many of them are widows. Their husbands were killed in the genocide, and they were sort of left with the land and started to rebuild at, post-conflict. We provided a $90,000 short-term loan to this business in 2005. So this was what I talked about a little bit before, what we call trade credit. So it was a short-term loan, less than a year, provided at the beginning of the harvest season so that Musasa had the cash on hand to be able to purchase coffee from the women farmers. When we started lending to them, they were sourcing from 300 farmers in the community. We've been lending to them these short-term loans for the past 10 years. Last year, we lent to them $700,000 in the same trade credit facility. We were the first lender back in 2005. Now we are among other lenders providing them financing, and now they are sourcing from over 2,000 members. And so I think that really highlights a number of the ways that agriculture can really benefit communities. So one, the impact that we're having on businesses, being long-term partners, growing with them over time, providing them the financing and sort of the capacity to be able to do that and source from more farmers in the community, provide them higher, more stable incomes. Another area of focus for us is the empowerment of women. So we work with about 30% of our portfolio meets what we call our gender inclusive criteria. So the business is sourcing from 30% or more of women farmers in their industry. And also, you know, in many of the places we work, it's post-conflict, and agriculture sort of after a crisis is sort of the quickest way to get a rural economy up and running, because you can plant things and they grow and you can start selling them and you don't have to build a lot of infrastructure and industry. So I think, you know, that business and that example is just one sort of the 500 businesses that we've served, but it sort of shows to highlight how we, the impact we have on businesses and their growth, and then how that translates into individual farmer and community impacts as well.
No, great, thank you. I mean, this is always my favorite part, to hear kind of the stories and to put human faces on what you're actually doing. I'm curious, how do you guys get these messages across to your investors, the kind of the stories that you tell, the impacts you're having? How do you get that to your investors and just let them know that these impacts that you're having?
We publish a newsletter called Investing for a Better World, which is available on our website. We also, for all of our clients, do a quarterly shareholder advocacy highlights to discuss that. We publish other impact reports. I know you publish newsletters, both of you.
Yeah, for us, we've always done a client-specific report. A lot of our early clients, and still a lot of the assets that we manage, are from regulated entities that need a very quantifiable, sometimes they really just want a spreadsheet, how many units, how many jobs, how many this, how many that. So we've done that. And more recently, Cheryl mentioned the last 2 years we've done an annual impact report, kind of like an annual report, not about our financial performance, but about work that we've done in these impact theme areas. And we're now finding, as the field is growing and evolving, that people really want both. They don't want just a story. You know, we can't just hire an English major. They want the data as well, but they don't want the data without the story. So it's becoming, I'm encouraged by this, a qualitative, it's always been quantitative, it's now also becoming a qualitative field.
We provide quarterly performance reports to investors. They're also publicly available on our website, and the reports show a number of impact indicators across the portfolio, but also the portfolio quality. So we talk about things that are going well. We're not shy about talking about things that aren't going well, and this is a challenging market that we're working in. So we provide that, you know, four times a year to investors. We also have alongside that quarterly investor calls. So we invite investors, usually our chief credit officer and our head of lending are presenting on the past quarter's results. We usually highlight if there's a particular initiative or business that we think it has impact that we want to share with investors. And then if you go on our website, we have, you know, we do a number of impact studies. So this is really trying to understand what are our impacts at the farmer level. It's pretty easy for us to understand what the impacts are at the business level, but then how does that translate into higher, more stable incomes for farmers? So we're doing, I think we have about 15 impact studies on the docket for this year. We publish the results of those and provide those to investors to give them a little bit more information on that. And then if you just go to our website, we have a lot of photos, we have client profiles and stories, we have videos, we like to blog, so there's a lot of blog posts. Our CEO is at his computer typing away, and so we like to use those different types of medium to share and show you what, you know, what investor capital is actually, the impact that it's having on the ground.
Yeah, I'll just say as a consumer and investor in these different types of strategies, I mean, just even the last 5 years, the sophistication with which both investment performance and impact-related performance is demonstrated by firms, obviously, of this quality and many others, is just growing and growing. And I feel like it must be like you're constantly trying to keep up with all the innovations in that space, which is all to our benefit as investors that, you know, every day, I think, I mean, it's probably created some demands on your organizations to be kind of keeping up with the trends and marketing machines in many ways. But from my perspective as a person who is, you know, trying to work with families and kind of tell them about these firms and make tangible what the investments are, it's a tremendous benefit. And I think it only kind of is, it helps to drive ultimately your growth of assets. I guess the question maybe I'd like to finish the panel with today would just be to have you speak a little bit about, you know, the trends you're seeing in investor demand. We talked about how it's increasing, but I guess I'd love to hear your perspective on how people are using your strategies in their portfolios. And I want to say this the right way. So there's totally an approach of sort of dabbling in the space, and that's great, right? That's how you get your feet wet. It's how you sort of get an experience. But I think there are other investors, and there's a changing approach where there is really an attempt to create a whole portfolio, and there's many opportunities to do so. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, how the people you work with are allocating to your investment strategies, and then maybe give some words of advice to people who are considering taking the plunge from your experience and years in the business.
I'll start on that. Trillium sponsored a white paper a few years ago we worked with the Tides Foundation, and in this, we called it total portfolio activation, which is a kind of a conceptual approach to looking at your total portfolio across all the different asset classes, and what are you trying to achieve from your financial and risk objectives, but also what are you trying to achieve, as David was saying, you know, that might be community impact or it might be environmental issues, what your goals from an environmental and social perspective were, and then looking at every different asset that you have in your portfolio, whether it is, you know, you have your Vanguard S&P 500 index, mm-hmm. or your, let's just choose it, somebody not in the room, mm-hmm. your Bill Gross's investment bond fund, and how do you say, is there an equivalent investment that I can make that gets those risk and return characteristics, but that has more in the impact that I'm looking at? So how do I take each thing that is maybe low impact or no impact, although actually we'd say everything has an impact, it just may not be the impact you're looking for, and move it into the quadrant of higher impact on the areas that you're looking at? So from a conceptual framework, I think it's very easy to get overwhelmed and say, I can't possibly do this across all my portfolios, so I'm not going to do something, not going to do anything. I did have a consultant several years ago who said to me what I will have to say I think is the dumbest thing I ever heard, which is that doing any kind of sustainable and responsible investing. It's like being pregnant. You're either 100% pregnant or you're not. Like, no. It's like a journey.
Yes.
And you have to take a step on that journey. You have to start somewhere. So start with where you can identify it and start doing it. And then you can take your next step and your step after. It's not like Venus, like Athena coming from the head of Zeus,
right,
full blown. You have to do it in steps and incrementally. And so we are seeing people beginning, they're saying, this is something I can do. And even if the rest of my portfolio isn't there yet, I can continue to look for opportunities to do it. But there are so many more opportunities, ways, products, asset classes available from the $5,000 level up to the multi-billion dollar level,
yes,
whether it's individually or through 40 Act funds, it can be done at many, many different ways. And I think just have to recognize it and keep the mental model that it is a journey and a process, not a full-blown, yeah, I have to be there 100% or I'm not there.
That's right.
So for us, I mean, you can see it to my right and to my left, we're kind of stuck with being a little bit on the boring side. My colleague Andy likes to say most people would choose to go to the dentist before they would talk about bonds.
No. That is definitely not true. It is the
Well, thank you.
Is the senior asset class.
Thank you. It is, but you probably all know that interest rates are low, and so we definitely suffer from the perception that impact is something that happens in your near market portfolio. It happens when equities, people talk about Tesla, people talk about proxy voting, and that stuff obviously kind of gets you a little more jazzed. What's happened or happening is that people are looking, and there's a point that Robert Shapiro made and that Cheryl just made that it's really important. Everything we do has an impact. Forget about investing. How we get to work, what do we eat? I can remember the first time I was out to dinner with someone, and it was with Joan Bavaria, our former colleague and leader, and someone asked where the fish was caught. This was 25 years ago. And I was embarrassed. It seemed like such a peculiar question to be in a restaurant. And of course now, you know, you can't go into, you know, we're so aware now of what we eat, what we consume, where was it made, what were the labor standards? What was the supply chain? All of that. Well, that is percolating and filtering into every investment decision that gets made horizontally across asset class. And guess what? Bonds are included in that.
Yeah.
So, you know, being there sort of hiding in plain sight with a 15-year track record and having a different type of client or prospect get in touch with us or their representative get in touch with us is very exciting development.
I personally invest in community capital management because they're doing such a good job. I mean, me personally, not as Trillium.
Well, thank you for the plug.
So I think Root Capital, our note product, is a nice way for people to dip their toes in the
yes,
more direct impact investing space. It is fixed income, fairly low minimum of $25,000, minimum lockup of only a year. So it's a good product to be able to try it out. And if people like it, which majority of our investors do renew their notes, you can do longer term, get a little bit higher rate. And also, I think we probably at face value seem like a pretty niche investment or impact segment, agricultural markets. But really the work that we're doing transcends across a lot of different issue areas. So it provides a spear point for which individual investors, which impact is a very personal journey, as Cheryl was saying, can enter the conversation. So whether you're interested in global poverty, whether you're interested in Latin America or Africa, whether you're interested in coffee and where your food is sourced from, or women's empowerment post-conflict, these are all ways that you can achieve those impacts in a Root Capital portfolio. So it can sort of translate across a lot of different interests. And I think what we've seen is that, for individual investors, maybe they try it out. It's a good fixed income product. Maybe they put you know, pick their cash allocation instead of a money market, they can get a much higher rate with a Root Capital.
Or instead of treasuries.
Or instead of treasuries. And we have a 100% repayment rate investors. So, you know, I think it is a good way to try it out. And then it, as investors grow and develop their portfolio, they can grow that allocation depending on sort of what their needs are. And I would just say, I think, echoing on some of what's been said, that for investors, I think sort of advice or I think a challenge for you all is figuring out, as you're looking at your portfolio, what is the impact that you want to have, and that's hard to, you can't necessarily quantify that. It's more of a qualitative decision, and so making sure that when you're looking across your portfolio, you know, we are all achieving very different types of impact. All are necessary, all are important, all have a place in a person's portfolio, but that we also offer very different returns, and so understanding what the trade-off or, you know, what the additive value of the impact that you're having in your portfolio, what that does for you, and so sort of being able to define that, I think, is important as people think about their strategies.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, and thank you guys so much. I think we're getting to the end of our time. So thank you guys so much for being here and being so gracious with your time, your expertise and your passion, and kind of seeing where those are colliding is really nice to see. You know, just reflecting a little bit on what Cheryl and David and Rob was saying, this area, and I heard it mentioned a couple weeks ago as, you know, these buckets of our external resume and our internal character. And for a lot of times we keep those separate. And a lot of the reason why is because you've never been able to bring those together. And so, you know, when I think personally about, you know, where I work, it's so great to work at a company where the internal character is very strong and it complements those external resumes very well. And I know that the perception of our industry, that isn't always the case where you see that. So it's a pleasure for me personally to work with this group and to see these investors here that are combining those two. And so, you know, as they were saying, I think that's the challenge is as we think about our values personally. And I know before I was talking to a couple of people that, you know, they're talking about all these areas that they're involved in their communities, and I think that we're all very involved in our communities, whether it's at church or a summer camp that we're helping out with, and so, you know, we're all involved in that anyway, so, you know, why can't our investments be similar to that? And I think we're at a point where it's not only possible, but it's something that's it's extremely accessible, and I hope we've gotten that point across, is that not only is it accessible and successful, but it's also a very good thing to do. So thank you guys so much for bringing that message with you, and we share that message at Ropes Wealth.
Thank you, yes.
So we hope this is the first of many conversations that we have together. We're actually planning another event in October on intergenerational wealth planning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we hope you can join us for that. As well. So, you know, we'd like to continue the dialogue. If it's something that you guys want to have more conversations about, you know, we definitely welcome that. So thank you all for coming.